This is 90.9 WBUR. I'm Lisa Mullins. The winners of this year's Pulitzer Prizes will be revealed on Monday. Now, if you're not sure what the Pulitzers are, think of them as the closest thing print journalism and the arts have to the Oscars. They're coveted and competitive, but less blingy. The Pulitzers turned 100 years old this year. The man behind them was a Hungarian-born newspaper publisher, Joseph Pulitzer. He wanted to honor excellence in the craft, and in the world of journalism, that's meant honors for momentous stories about Watergate, Hurricane Katrina, and financial fraud. Roy Harris Jr. is intimately familiar with the Pulitzers. He's a veteran reporter for the Wall Street Journal. His dad won a Pulitzer as a journalist. Harris has just issued a new edition of the book Pulitzer's Gold, A Century of Public Service Journalism. He focuses on the highest Pulitzer honor, the Gold Medal for Meritorious Public Service. The Boston Post won the award in 1921.
The Boston Post got onto this story because the editor, a fellow named Richard Grozier, didn't believe the claims that he was seeing in newspapers, including his own, from this fellow Charles Ponzi, who was promising that through his investment plan, he could double people's money in 90 days. And this is the beginning of the Roaring Twenties, when the idea of making a lot of money fast, get rich quick, was very attractive to people. But in this case, Charles Ponzi had no real fundamental investment there at all. So there was no money in the plan except what the people turned into him. That's what the nature of a Ponzi scheme was.
So the guy was a charlatan.
He was a total charlatan, but he was adorable.
And the Why pictures was he adorable?
He was a cute little Italian fellow. And one of the reasons I think he caught on so well in Boston was that Babe Ruth had just been sold to the New York Yankees.
He was doing fabulously well.
He was doing very well. And Boston was looking for a hero. One of my favorite stories from that old account is that in his later years, Charles Ponzi, from jail, laughingly said that the newspaper had really done a good job on him.
And so if it's not enough to get a Pulitzer, you also have the Ponzi.
Right.
Charles Ponzi's thumbs up.
He pointed out that the Post showed that he was robbing Peter to pay Paul.
By the way, looking through the winners, there are a lot of men in there and not a lot of women. And this is not surprising, given the low profile of even many extremely accomplished women in the business.
And no blacks until very, very late.
Until when? Do you know?
Oh, I think Gwendolyn Brooks, the poet, was the first black winner. Being the 100th anniversary of the Pulitzer Prizes, there have been a lot of centennial celebrations where there's been soul searching in the Pulitzer organization about why it was that the black press was not acknowledged. I mean, there were black newspapers all over the country.
Well, you have a very interesting story about Lois Willie. In the 1950s, she was hired as a newspaper reporter in Chicago, primarily doing the society page or the women's page. No surprise there. She was with the Chicago Daily News when she dug into many different stories, but one having to do with birth control services in low-income areas especially. Tell us how she won the award and what an amazing surprise it was that she won.
Yes, well, it was a surprise. And this was a case where in Chicago, which if you think of Boston as the most Catholic city in the world, you'd get a fight from Cubs and White Sox fans who would say, no, 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 we are the most Catholic city in the world. And in those days, birth control information was considered a taboo subject in most newspapers. So she did this story. And what she did was to look at real life of poor people, of people who were burdened by huge families and weren't able to use birth control the way wealthier people did. And when she wrote those stories, it became a way of talking to readers in Chicago about what life is really like and what was needed in order to improve the health of everyone.
So you have a bit of the story of one of her stories here. Again, this is one of Lois Willie's stories. Do you mind reading this?
Well, this opening paragraph from one of Lois Willie's stories talks about the way that women were told about children back then, and the story starts like this. On a hot Saturday morning in August, Mrs. Sandra Allman, 26, walked into Newbury Settlement Houses just off Maxwell Street, waited in line with about 100 other women, and poured out her story. This is what she said. I asked about it at County Hospital when my youngest was born, and everybody shut up like a clam. I've got 7 now, I told the doctor, and he said, well, you're healthy enough for 7 more. That was the way birth control was viewed then, not at all.
So bring us back to the Catholic town of Boston and the spotlight team at the Boston Globe that won the award for the series that has been turned into a very highly regarded movie that just won the Academy Award for Best Picture. One of the hallmarks of the story is the writing itself. It's the reporting and the writing.
Absolutely. Whenever I talk to groups about the movie, everybody's fascinated with that movie. And one of the things I tell them is, as wonderful as the movie is, it really does miss a lot of what went on in terms of the writing and the planning of these stories. If I may, I'll just read a few paragraphs from one story that kind of show what you get from The Globe and its writing. This was written by Walter Robinson. Like other victims of pedophile priests, Tom remembers vividly what happened just after he was molested in a dark corridor at Immaculate Conception School in Revere by the Reverend James R. Porter. It was 1960. He was 12, but he still recalls running. He ran, and then he hid, under a desk in the second floor classroom, frozen in terror as Porter called out for him. And then he ran again, out of the school and home. Chris was victimized about 12 years ago. He remembers struggling as the Reverend John J. Gagan groped him in the rectory at St. Julia's in Weston before he squirmed out of Gagan's grasp. As Gagan yelled after him, "No one will ever believe you," Chris ran from the room. He ran from the rectory. He ran behind the church and cowered there until his father came for him. Gagan was right. Chris never said a word. Now Tom and Chris have stopped running. Thomas R. Fulcino, the father, and Christopher T. Fulcino, his son, are victims of Massachusetts' two most notorious priest pedophiles, 3 decades apart. For their family, lightning struck twice.
Where's the place for journalism like that today? Even the Boston Globe is undergoing some extremely hard times, a lot of cuts, and that is the case with newspapers across the country if they haven't folded now. This is the kind of thing that Pulitzer honors. Is there a place for it?
Well, it's a terrible concern. Newspapers, news organizations are under severe pressure, and the business model hasn't been keeping up with their needs. People are getting their news now from their cell phone, maybe even from their watch these days. And at Pulitzer Prize time, I think you realize that there's this world of news reporting going on that you weren't even aware of, coast to coast. So it's a good time to kind of recalibrate your understanding of the press and realize that the press has a major role in our democracy.
The book is called Pulitzer's Gold, A Century of Public Service Journalism by Roy Harris, Jr. Very nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here talking about the Pulitzers.